For many of us, the actor Ralph Fiennes entered our consciousness playing a sadistic concentration camp commander in Schindler's List. Soon, he'll be seen as Voldemort in the next Harry Potter movie. It is a far more benign, if banal, character he plays in The Constant Gardener. It's a movie based on the John le Carré novel set in Kenya. Fiennes plays a British diplomat, Justin Quayle, whose wife is played by Rachel Weisz.
I'm safe home now, sweetheart.
No, you're drenched. Look, take those wet things off, Tess. Come to bed with me, please.
I will, but there's something I have to do first. It's important.
Tess, whatever it is that you and Arnold are doing, I'd like it to stop.
Wow. Who have you been talking to?
No one. These are my concerns, all right? I'm thinking of your health.
No. No, you're not. They've asked you to rein me in, and you're doing it.
Ralph, spelled R-A-L-P-H, Fiennes, talked about his character, a passive man whose mind is in his work, but not his heart.
Not a career diplomat. Someone who's more interested in, hence the title, more interested in being a gardener. That's his pastime, and I think that provides a clue to him. I mean, so the constancy of being a gardener, the patience, the tenaciousness, persistence and gentleness, those are, I think, are qualities that le Carré gives Justin. He's meek, but actually, in the end, his interior spirit is quite tough, I think, in the end.
I gather that the British Foreign Office made the High Commission in Nairobi, the embassy, in effect, in Nairobi,
yes.
Kenya, open to the cast to go and meet real British diplomats.
Yes, we did. I got in to the High Commission there and met the High Commissioner and two or three other people working there. And they're working very hard to help Kenya. But unlike the High Commission in our story.
In your story. as an actor, when you do a piece of research like that, when you go to look at the people who would be the characters that you and your fellow cast members are going to represent.
Yes.
Does it do anything for you? Do you actually see things that make you think, I'm going to do that during the movie?
It's fascinating. Well, you also, you often see things that are nothing like what, I mean, it helps you sort of sift your way through the choices you're going to make to do that job.
So where does that lead you in terms of playing the character? What do you do that with the basis of that insight?
It's a sort of magpie process. You're pinching bits of things you've come across in other books or bits of information. Like, I sat down with John le Carré and he talked at length about Justin, how he imagined his background and the sort of tailor he might have gone to and what it is about Tessa that perhaps drew them to each other. And in all this, it's a kind of mix. And I, even having been to high commissions, met the author, thought about it a lot, nothing prepares you in a way for the nakedness of the first day in front of the lens. And in a peculiar way, you've done your preparation, but you mustn't be too prepared, because I think you've got to be open to the moment.
You divide your time between movies and stage. And I gather you've been doing Mark Antony recently in Julius.
Yes. Well, I love the theatre. That's why I wanted to be an actor, was because of the theatre. My mother comes in here, she put on records of Laurence Olivier doing speeches from Hamlet and Henry V, which just shook me up. I mean, I couldn't believe the sound of these words and this extraordinary voice. And although I've been very fortunate in the film work that has come my way, I need to get back to the stage. If I'm away from maximum of 2 years, I feel something's wrong.
Well, when you play, say, Mark Antony and Julius Caesar, you can, at every performance, do something a little bit different.
Yes.
If you played Justin Quayle, the character from the movie The Constant Gardener, if you played him night after night on the stage,
yes,
would there be things you'd be trying differently about the
character? Absolutely. Yeah. I don't ask me what, but I think you have to keep fresh. I need to be able to have some freedom just to, I mean, not to the point of completely disturbing the production, but just within the bounds of what's been agreed, that to keep reinventing things.
But a movie sounds like the exact opposite, that there is going to be exactly one take of that part that will be frozen in amber forever. That's the way Justin Quayle will be. That's the way you got it when you shot that day, period.
Well, one of the things that Rachel and I both, we were laughing. I mean, I think Fernando knows quite quickly what he wants.
Now, Fernando Morella, you have to explain, is the director.
Fernando Morella, who directs the movie, he directed City of God, knows, I think he has an incredibly strong instinct for when he has the take he needs. I think Rachel and I both felt that sometimes he wanted to move on, and we felt we still had more to offer up. So we would sometimes be rather neurotically nudging Fernando to give us two or three more takes.
We really can't be that far away from the digitally assembled movie at home, where we can pick our version of the take and scramble them up and see it differently every time, you know?
Well, yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Yeah, I'm sure that's... Well, that's why the stage is always a sort of last bastion of the actor's independence, maybe, or control, because you can't do that on stage yet anyway.
Was it unusual to have a Brazilian director eliciting from you the epitome of the British diplomat?
Well, I think it was a fantastic stroke of luck that Fernando came on board to do this, because I think that there is at the heart of this book particularly a kind of Britishness which Le Carré does brilliantly. Some of it's a little dated, the portrayals of some of the people working in the High Commission in the book. Greatly and massively entertaining to read, but I think in transferring to the film, it could just get a bit heavy, and I think that Fernando wasn't interested in that at all, that English thing of hierarchy, class, and all that stuff. That's in the book very strongly. And Fernando had no interest in that at all. Yeah. He wanted a film about Africa, set in Africa, with Africa as a strong background, almost in
almost foreground.
Foreground, yeah, totally. I mean, he really wanted to get his camera into Kenya. And I think he cut away a lot of what could have been and adapting. A lot of dead wood went away because he wanted to sort of get urgently into the heart of Kenya. I think it was a great choice. And also his camera work, his style of editing, his style of using the camera, is the antithesis of sort of maybe perhaps a more traditional approach that would come with maybe an English or American director.
Yeah, I have to say I was reminded of a very different film, of Lost in Translation, that the place is a character here. I mean, this is about...
Oh, I love that film, Lost
about
in Translation.
Kenya, in which Tokyo is not just a backdrop, but it's so much a part of the
story. I think that's very, very... I mean, I think that's wonderful when you feel that in a film. You feel a sense of place is really strong, and you feel you can be there, or if you've been there yourself, you can be really reminded of it and brought back there. I love that.
Before I let you go, I want to ask you the inevitable question. The reason that we say Ralph Fiennes as opposed to Ralph Fiennes is that just because that's how you say it. That's how you say that.
That's how you say it. There's very few people calling themselves Ralph and spelling their name Ralph. But it is a traditional, older way of pronouncing that spelling.
Well, Ralph Fiennes, thanks a lot for talking with us about
great talking to you
and much else.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.